I'm Nancy Mendoza, and welcome to Micropod. Last September, a new virus emerged called MERS-CoV, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome coronavirus. As its name suggests, it's an acute respiratory disease that originates in the Middle East and is causing shortness of breath, fever, and a cough. It can also be fatal. Public Health England held a conference about MERS-CoV earlier this month, so I went along to find out more about the disease.
As of yesterday, some 80 confirmed cases of MERS-CoV infection have been reported to WHO, and what this figure clearly shows is the cases from earlier last year, the cases identified retrospectively in Jordan, and the subsequent cases at the end of last year and then this year, with the numbers building up, particularly most recently in Saudi Arabia, but with other cases linked to the United Arab Emirates, Jordan and Qatar.
That was Professor John Watson, Head of Respiratory Diseases at Public Health England. Of those 80 cases worldwide, 44 people have died. So I spoke to him after his presentation to find out how much we know so far about MERS-CoV.
Although there are quite a few things that we do know about it, that's swamped by the number of things that we don't know about it. We know that there have been about 80 cases identified worldwide, and all of those cases, one way or another, are linked to the Middle East. But some have occurred in other countries in North Africa and Europe. But in the latter case, that is in the Europe and North African cases, they're all either linked to the Middle East or are the result of the limited transmission that can occur person to person that has occurred in France and the UK and Tunisia.
So we know that the virus can be transmitted between human beings. What else do we need to know to understand the spread of the virus?
The most important thing is we need to understand how it is that human beings are contracting this infection in the first place. We don't know the source of this virus. It's likely, at least at some point, to be associated with an animal reservoir like bats, but it may not be exposure to bats that's important. It may be exposure to another intermediate host or to some kind of environmental exposure. So we need to have a better understanding of that, and we need to have an understanding about what it is that humans need to do in order to get exposed, or what kind of behaviours. The other thing that we really need to get a grip on is the extent to which milder or even asymptomatic infections occur in humans, and whether that in any way indicates that transmission can be sustained in the human population. On the basis of what we know at the moment, it seems that when transmission does occur between humans, it's a very limited amount of transmission that comes to a halt. But we can't be absolutely certain about that until we've got a good grip on the occurrence of mild or asymptomatic infections.
So we know that there are similar viruses in bats, and we think bats might be the original source. Which species of animals might we be looking at as an intermediate reservoir?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that in parts of the Middle East, such as Saudi Arabia, that they are looking at other animals, but they have found no evidence either in bats or in any other animals so far of evidence of this infection. And so there are a number of other animal species around that are common in that part of the world, camels, for example, but also goats and other domestic animals, and clearly there needs to be investigation of them. But at this stage, there is no indication as to which of them, if any, are playing a part.
So for microbiologists, we're looking at a lot of work here to carry out surveillance, to identify potential serology. What else can microbiologists do to help with answering these sorts of questions?
This is very much a team effort. It's really one where the clinical people heighten clinical suspicion, the public health people with an understanding of what's going on around the world and the potential issues of exposure, and microbiology colleagues who can contribute with understanding both of infections that are or are not identified in an individual and the potential for testing for this infection, that there needs to be a continuation of that collaborative effort to be able to, A, deal with cases and their potential contacts, as we've seen in the United Kingdom, but also to be contributing to the collaborative efforts worldwide to research and get better understanding of what's going on here.
John Watson. Also speaking at the conference was Dr. Brian McCloskey, Director of Global Health at Public Health England. He summed up the causes for concern.
So there's two big issues still left in this. One is there are large gaps in our knowledge. We don't know where this came from. We don't know an awful lot about what sort of illness it produced in general. We know about the severe cases. And the second thing is that because of the experience, because of the memory of SARS that sits in a lot of people's brains, quite rightly, there is quite a lot of international concern. And because we've seen from the very first case in the UK last September that this virus will travel. It hasn't shown an ability to travel the same way SARS did yet, but it does travel. So we have a disease about which we know very little, an international concern about the spread of it. And that in itself is something that we need to take account of.
Brian McCloskey. Scientists know that the new coronavirus has a large RNA genome and that understanding its features is important to identifying the virus and its origins. The closest genetic relationship is with the coronavirus found in bats. Mollica Galliano, Head of Genomic Sequencing at Public Health England's Virus Reference Department.
Epidemiologically, it's quite difficult. Bats don't have that much contact with humans, so most people think that there may be some maybe domestic animal that acts as an intermediate reservoir, that it may be able to be infected with this virus that actually comes from bats, but is infecting this intermediate reservoir, and is this animal which is passing the virus to the humans in the Middle East region. They haven't identified which animal could be the reservoir, but I understand they are doing a large number of sampling in animals to detect whether they can find the reservoir.
Part of understanding a new virus that emerges and perhaps infects just a few people initially is being able to test other people who've perhaps been in contact with someone who's infected. Can you explain how the genomics research you've been doing has helped with that?
Yes, another useful thing that comes from obtaining genetic information is that then we are able to choose which could be the best regions to target for PCR diagnostics. Usually we try to select regions that are quite conserved in the genome so that we ensure that we can detect most of the viruses that are circulating. In our case, we tested three real-time PCRs developed at the time of the infection detected in the UK. And for example, we realized that two of the PCRs were working well, but the third PCR, which was supposed to be the one that could work the best, was failing completely. And we found that with this virus that was circulating in September, there was a hole in the genome, and that hole affected positivity of this PCR. So that's an example of how genomic sequencing can help in choosing the right diagnostic test.
When the first case of the virus was identified last year, scientists from the Erasmus Medical Centre in the Netherlands sent Public Health England a sample. The patient died from a severe respiratory disease, and most of the cases so far have been in Saudi Arabia. But when the virus appeared in the UK earlier this year, alarm bells began to ring.
There were three more cases of the novel coronaviruses in February, but these cases were epidemiologically linked in the sense that the first case was a middle-aged man who had traveled to Pakistan and KSA, developed symptoms in KSA and then came back to London, was seriously ill and died after 50 days. A family member, a male, had contact during 4 days with this patient. This patient was also immunosuppressed because he was treated for a malignancy and unfortunately died 10 days later. And there was a third case, which was a family member, a female family member, who had limited contact with the first case, but she only developed mild respiratory symptoms and recovered completely. I think it was the first case where we could document infection with the novel coronavirus, and it was a mild case. We got a sample from these cases, and we were also able to obtain the sequence of the genomes, which was useful to show that the index case had a virus that was confirmed as the novel coronavirus, similar to the other two cases known already. Also, we could see that the genomes from the two secondary cases, the linked cases, were almost identical to the first case, and that although the epidemiological evidence was saying that, obviously they got it from each other, the genome sequence also proved further, gives further evidence of that transmission. So that was the first documented person-to-person transmission of the novel coronavirus.
By obtaining several sequences, Monica and her team can calculate back to where the new virus came from, and they are currently characterizing the virus grown in a cell culture.
It's important because this virus may change when adapting to cell culture, and this is very important from the point of view of vaccine development, because for vaccine development they may use this virus, and it's important to know whether the virus may change when you grow it. I think that the important thing is that through sequencing we can detect mutations that can have biological significance, such as the virus is adapting to the humans, and maybe the virus is being more readily to infect human to human, and all these changes can be detected through mutations. So it's important to continue the surveillance through sequencing.
Monica Galliano. No infection has been detected in bats so far, or any other animal. But the head of the virology department at the Erasmus Medical Center in the Netherlands, Ab Osterhaus, is convinced that a natural host reservoir will be identified, and he outlined the priorities for research.
I think it is of utmost importance today to identify the animal reservoir, the intermediate reservoir, if there is any, and I think we should do as soon as possible large-scale serology there, either abattoirs or whatever way we want to do it. Identify animal models. I think we have to do a bit, but we decided not yet to do the type of experiments that we've been doing for SARS with the macaque model as we have it in-house now, because we think it's not robust enough to do those in vivo studies, so we're still working. One of the things we have done now, we have characterized, let's say, the receptors of all the CD26 receptor of some 10 different species at the moment, and are looking which, in organ cultures, which species would be the most susceptible. So I think we are moving in the right direction there. As soon as we have that, we will do pathogenesis studies, and as Thijs showed, human pathogenesis studies are quite important. Look at the pathology, what do you see? For instance, if you look at H5N1, there's only a handful of people have been subjected to autopsies, and that's a shame. We don't even know whether the virus really gives a generalized infection there. So basically, we need to do better there, and then also in animals, diagnostic and epidemiological tests were very rapidly shared after the virus was identified, and then antiviral treatment strategies and vaccination strategies should be carried out as soon as possible.
Ab Osterhaus. Work on a vaccine is ongoing, but it's important to stress that MERS-CoV, although a serious disease, is not looking like it's going to become a pandemic. That's it for Micropod. I'm Nancy Mendoza, and before I go, congratulations to our regular presenter, Lucy Harper. She's just produced something else small and perfectly formed. A baby boy. See you again soon.